Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Lisa Simeone. This is a song from 16th century Spain, played by an American woman named Therese Schroeder Schieker. Along with her classical music background, Schroeder Schieker has been trained in music thanatology. The term comes from ancient Greek, thanatos, the personification of death. Thanatology is the study of death, the whole process, for the dying person as well as his loved ones, with an emphasis on palliative care. Music thanatologists such as Therese Schroeder Schieker believe music can help ease the transition of dying people, can comfort them, and relieve their suffering. In that way, they're like hospice workers who either come to people's homes or care for them in hospice institutions. We all know we will die, even as we try to distance ourselves from it or use euphemisms such as pass away. And many of us need help, either for ourselves or family members. That's where hospice workers come in. Their reasons for entering the profession are varied, but all of them share this desire to face death calmly and squarely, and to help others do the same. Produced by Dan Collison and Elizabeth Meister, today's program is called Hospice Chronicles.
My name is Karen Elkma, and I've been with hospice for about 2 years now. I always like to start, if we could go around and have each of you introduce yourselves and just share maybe what brought you here or where your interest in hospice comes from.
My name is Joe Hasse. I'm a retired teacher, and I'm almost 65 years old, and I'm going to certainly be facing my death within the next 20 minutes.
And I'm Betty Elsass. I was a recreation director for skilled care and retirement settlements and stuff like that. My husband was a minister, so I was very involved within his work.
Tonight there are going to be two speakers. The first one is going to be talking about the importance of having boundaries with your patients, even from a volunteer standpoint.
On initial visit, Frank carries his prayer book into a patient's home and places it on the bedside table. You say no. Yeah. Why no?
Because I feel on the initial visit, you have to find out where they're at, not where you're at.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And would you maybe have a conversation with them about that, whether they were interested in prayer or
I don't think the initial visit I would.
No. But at some point.
If it comes up in the conversation.
Anybody else on that?
I don't see anything wrong with it myself.
Okay.
Because if that person did want to have something read or prayer, mm-hmm. it would be there. And if not, then, I mean, what would it hurt?
You know,
if they didn't want it, then that's fine. I wouldn't push it. But if they want it, then it's there.
What if they were from a different faith?
Whatever.
I think I agree with Betty. I definitely wouldn't even bring up the topic of my spiritual belief unless I were asked specifically. I wouldn't even think of bringing it up.
I'm Carmen Belchin, the volunteer coordinator for Hospice at Home. This volunteer goes into a patient's home, and they follow the wishes of the patient and the family. They don't come with their own agenda. They don't bring their beliefs system into that home.
Most of my service has been in respite, giving the frontline family caregivers a break.
Roy Thompson and Judy Lampart were brought in to give the new volunteers a sense of what it is to be a hospice volunteer.
It's tough when you have a wife who's got Alzheimer's, and he's so loyal. He sits right by her side, day in and day out.
Right. That's what I'm impressed, too, with the couples that are out there and how well they are keeping their marriage vows. It is astounding. They take on sickness and in health, and for better or for worse, very seriously.
Patients mm-hmm. may be able to tell their volunteer things that they can't tell their families, that they don't want to tell their families. So we need someone who can just be that ear, that person that the patient feels they can open up to.
And this particular gentleman told me things that I'm absolutely certain that his wife did not know. And it was like a confession.
We look for someone who is comfortable with someone who is ill and who is probably close to dying.
And I'm thinking of one fellow, too. His main companion and caregiver was little Samantha, his little dog. And Samantha was in sore need of a good bath and a trim. So I took her, and it was wonderful, because when I brought her in the door with her little, she had a little bandana on, she was as cute as a button, he just absolutely lit up. Absolutely.
This is another thing. You might be the one that finds them. I only in one instance in the last 2.5 years, you know, walked in with someone who was alone by herself, and it was 24 hours or so before she died, I found her on the floor. So lots of things can happen, not to scare you, but just to know that you can be in lots of different situations.
Anybody nervous about going out there? Mm-hmm.
It's okay. I still am nervous. Oh, was he going to like me? Or were they going to like me? You know, what are they like? You ask all these questions in your head. Mainly, will I say the wrong thing?
I'm a little bit skeptical about whether or not I can handle it. And I think I could easily get out of my element if I wasn't very careful and patient and slow moving and be careful about how things go.
I don't have anxiety, maybe because I've been there as far as being my husband's caregiver, and I know how the last days are, and it could be a joyous time. I think it's a journey that you take hand in hand, and he and I were together to the very last minute. I accompanied him to the very end of his road, and I don't think there's anything in this world and like it.
It's the one who won't be taken.
We have a little ceremony. We go up to the sanctuary and we light the hospice candle and we sing the rose because it's symbolic of our particular hospice.
And the soul afraid of dying that never learns to live.
And we give them their certificates and we give them their name tags and let them know they're ready to get out there.
You've been together for 7 weeks. You've learned a lot. You probably learned that there's so much more for you to learn, but that's okay. You'll go out and you'll experience, and that's the important thing now.
I'm Joe Hossie, and we're ready to go in and meet Preston and Betty Bennett for the first time. We're here at their home in Niles, 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a rainy day, and I think Betty's going to go into town and do some shopping, and we'll hang out with her husband, Preston, who's having some problems, and we'll see how we can help out a little bit.
Come in.
Hi, Betty.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
This is my first assignment. We went through our volunteer training. I guess it was 6 weeks or so ago now, so I'm ready for it. All you have to do is see how you can help out.
This is my husband, Preston. He won't talk to you very much.
Okay.
Maybe not at all. I don't know.
Okay. Hi, Preston. I'm Joe.
He's Joe. You got a brother by the name of Joe, right?
I don't know if it is.
It's okay, sweetie. He's had the Parkinson's 28 years plus, and then the dementia is what is the big, big problem right now.
So, Will he pretty much just sit there in the chair?
Yeah. Yeah, he just sits there in the chair.
So I'm going to stay here with you, Preston, and Betty's going to go into town and do some errands.
I don't know.
Well, I'll get back as soon as I can.
I'm really not in any rush at all, so don't worry about it a bit.
Well, I appreciate it. I mean, it's just things that comes up that I can't deal with him, you know.
Yeah.
And I can't leave him here, and I can't take him with me very easily.
Yeah.
Because I took him out the other day. I had to go to the post office and to the bank, and I stopped by the drugstore, just run in and run right back out almost, and he locked the car door on me. I couldn't get the car door open.
Uh-huh.
and I couldn't get it, make him understand, to open the door. So I happened to think I had another set of keys in my pocket, so I got back in with that. So he, you know, he does things that he don't realize he's doing it.
No.
He don't realize it. So it's been a rough years. At the last couple of years, it's been almost torture.
You be good, hon. You be good.
Respite care means giving the caregiver, Betty in this case, a chance to get out of the house and get some rest or go to lunch or do errands that she needs to do.
The gentleman here is going to stay with you so I can run and take care of a few things, okay? Okay.
I hear you that you were a veteran of the Korean War. You remember that? You remember being in Korea? Being a soldier in Korea? That was a while back.
There wasn't any interaction with Preston particularly.
Should I read something to you?
I read to him a little bit out of a book that Betty had.
It's called The Purpose-Driven Life. You are not an accident. I am your creator. You were in my care even before you were born, says the Lord.
I'm a Buddhist, and my spiritual background encourages me to investigate death and consider my own death, consider the preciousness of human life.
To make the best use of your life, you must never forget two truths. First, compared to eternity, life is brief. Do you want to sleep, Preston, or do you want me to keep reading?
He wasn't even aware of what was going on. And I turned the TV on for him, but he didn't seem to be particularly even watching that. So I read my own book to myself for a little while, and then Betty came home.
Well, it was helpful because I had some things I had to take care of. I got some groceries and browsed around, didn't buy anything, but this took a little time for me, I guess.
I have no idea how Betty manages because I'm bigger than she is, and she gets him dressed and puts him to bed and puts his pajamas on and everything.
Christmas Eve night was just about more than I could handle because he was asleep and he was wet, and I didn't know how I was going to get him dressed, but I got it done, but I paid for it the next day because I was so sore from, you know, pulling on him, lifting on him, but I finally got him some dry clothes on, so.
I felt like I'd done okay. I felt like I had contributed. I felt good about it. But I look at it as helping Betty.
Here's your company. Her name is Betty. She's coming to talk to you, get to know you, okay? She's a volunteer for hospice.
My name is Betty Alsass, and I kind of made up my mind shortly after my husband died that I would want to be part of the hospice program.
I'm very glad to meet you.
Well, I'm glad to meet you, too.
My husband did not choose hospice, but I noticed that the last 2 months of his life were kind of lonely because people kind of stayed away.
I understand you like The Price is Right.
What is it?
It's on right now.
The woman I've been assigned to is a 97-year-old woman, very, very hard of hearing, so we may be shouting a little bit through this.
Would you mind if I come and see you once in a while?
The price is right, you say.
No, that's okay. Yes, the price is right, isn't it?
I'm excited at my first assignment because it's in a foster care home. For 30 years, I've worked in nursing home, retirement home, assisted living homes. I was a recreation director. You know, I'm a minister's wife, and I've met a lot of people over our life, and we've served a lot of people. And the most intriguing part for both my husband and I is to take off the layers of a person and find out, you know, who and what they are inside, what their hopes and dreams are. And I think it's important for all of us to do that for one another, because then we can understand better where they're coming from.
I understand you were born in Buchanan.
I used to live in Buchanan.
At 97 years old, she had a bout with skin cancer, and hospice was called in because she was deteriorating. It was in September that they were called in.
My name's Julie Vineyard, and I'm the owner and operator of Vineyard's Adult Family Care in Killeen, caring for the elderly. Mamie came to me about 3 years ago, and she more or less has just, it's called losing the will to thrive type thing, where she just, her body is just kind of shutting down. And I suggested to the family that we call hospice in and let them do an evaluation. And so they're maintaining her, helping her to keep comfortable. We allow Mamie to do what she wants when she wants. She eats when she wants to. She has, you know, loving people around her, and that's where she's at this point in her life.
You know what? It's a lot warmer in here than outside.
I bet it is, too.
Well, they kind of tell you, you know, things to talk about. You can talk about their life, things in general. Like today, we might say something about the snow and hook in on the fact that this is December 1st.
Did you used to walk to the store in the snow?
I used to.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't now, of course.
No, before I left the house, I was sitting and thinking about her. And I was trying to think of all the changes she saw in the world in this 97 years. It's got to be awesome.
My dad worked at Clark's.
I love the part where she was talking about her father worked in the foundry at Clark.
I'll bet that was hot in the summer.
He didn't wear no shirt.
And he didn't wear a shirt.
And he was a hairy man.
And he had so much hair on his chest.
I was glad I was. Didn't take after him that much.
She was glad she didn't take after him.
Is your sister still alive?
Yes. I can't see her like I want to.
Yeah.
That's hard, isn't it?
Yes. Because we need each other more than when we did when we was young.
I'm really concerned about her wanting to see her sister. I know it's not probable that we'll be able to bring her to see her sister, but if we can exchange pictures that they can see each other, that may be well for her.
Henry is gone. He died and left me alone.
Henry was your one love.
He was my husband.
Yes.
I didn't want no other man. Well, anyway.
We like to stay about an hour, if that's at all possible. But you also have to read. We got to keep in mind why we're here, and these people are terminal, and we have to respect that and pick up on their needs.
Thank you for stopping and visiting.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
And when she said thank you for coming, I knew it was time for us to leave.
It was nice meeting you.
It's always nice
meeting you, too.
And you take care.
I will. I'll try.
Okay.
That's the best we can do.
That's right.
I thought it was uplifting for me. I got a lot of fulfillment out of going. I can't think of a better way to spend my morning. It's kind of an honor to be brought into somebody's life like that, to be able to stand on the threshold and really look at this person and really just know that they cried, they laughed, they played, they worked. It's who and what they are, and look at them now, and especially with people in nursing homes, 9 out of 10 times they sit there and watch the door just waiting for someone to come in. And if no one else can be that someone, I'm honored to be the one.
I'll come back and see you next week.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Hi, Preston. You remember me? I'm Joe.
Today I was going to come and stay with Preston while Betty went to the dentist. When I talked to her this morning, she said that she had hurt her arm trying to maneuver him, so she had to cancel her dentist's appointment today. So I'm going to just stay here for a short time while she goes to the post office.
You remember seeing him?
It's been about 2 weeks.
You remember seeing him?
Not very often.
Oh, okay. Oh, not very often. Okay, let's finish eating your oatmeal, okay?
I'm wore out. I'm literally wore out. I just need a little bit of space
to get some personal things done that I have been neglecting.
She has made arrangements to have Preston put into respite care for 5 days. I said, well, Betty, that's a good idea. I think you made the right decision there. I think she's having a little bit of guilt about taking him out of the home.
I'm breaking, and I know I need to take care of myself, too. I mean, as well as take care of him.
How come you haven't called me?
Well, I just kept thinking every day it would get better. I hate to bother people because I know they've got their own lives to live. It's just hard for me to ask for help because I've always done it myself. But I'm learning.
I think I need to call Betty a couple of times a week because she hasn't called me yet. Well, I think I'll call her every few days, even while he's over at respite. So I think I need to participate a little bit more.
Well, I'm going to go run an errand, and I'll be back in a little bit, okay? Okay? Joe's going to stay with you till I get back. I won't be very long. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why she wants Preston here in the house myself. I mean, she can't manage with him herself, and she's distressed about the whole situation, and she's really tired, and seems to me like she'd be better off having him in a nursing home, and she could go visit him every day, you know. But, you know, there might be some reasons.
I made a promise until I just can't go no longer. That's the way it'll be. Till whatever, however much time he's got. Because I made that promise, and I just can't break it unless it gets to that I just don't have a choice.
I called her twice since I visited over there last time, and she didn't particularly need anything. And Preston Bennett is back from his 5-day stay and seems to be doing about the same.
Good afternoon, Mamie.
This is Betty, and I'm here to see Mamie again. And I've seen her probably about 5-6 times now. And you could see a slight deterioration each week when you go there. She's still very difficult to communicate with, but now she seems more tired and listless. A lot of times when she's talking, she'll have her eyes closed now, and she kind of gives you the hint that it's time to go, maybe a little earlier than she did before. You could still see the spirit trying to come out, but you can really see her going downhill.
How are you today, Mamie?
I'm just tired.
You're very tired?
Yeah.
I haven't seen her up in the last 3 weeks. She's been in bed.
You sleepy today?
Maybe I could get a snooze in.
You wanted to get a snooze in.
Little by little things, the sparkle in her eyes aren't there. Her little laugh, that she'll laugh at something, like normally she'd say if she wanted to snooze, she'd say it with a little laugh. And now she's very tired.
It's a dark day today, isn't it?
I really hate to wake her up if she really needs the sleep. Having worked in an environment where we dealt with people in final stages, being on staff, you were brought more into, you know, what's happening with them. And so when you would go into their room or something, you'd be aware that they're deteriorating. Here we don't get that kind of information, and I know because of confidentiality it can't happen. So a lot of times we go in there cold, and we don't know, you know, just what's happening in their life. And we walk into it sometimes. So it kind of puts you a little bit more on edge. And going in there and realizing, don't come in with an agenda.
It's difficult to see them go downhill like that because, you know, before you were able to get some response out of them, and each week is less and less with her.
Last Wednesday, I was getting prepared to have my visit with Mamie, and I was just getting dressed, and I got a call from our volunteer coordinator telling me that Mamie had passed away that morning. It hit me that
I had wished I could see her before she passed away. But then, you know, she went her way. And I think at 97 years old, I think, you know, she was hoping this would happen, that she'd be able to go and be with her beloved husband. She dearly loved him, and she kept on looking up at the shelf where his picture was. I read the death notice, and I was thinking about her life and all the people that she touched. And I said a prayer that God would receive her and, you know, to look over her life and the beauty that she brought to it and honor her for that.
Hospice Chronicles was produced by Dan Collison and Elizabeth Meister of Long Haul Productions. We have more information about this program on our website, soundprint.org. You can also listen to all of our shows there if you'd like. The address again is soundprint.org. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU and American University. If you have any questions or comments for us, we'd love to hear them. The easiest way is by email. We're at talkback@soundprint.org. Next time on Soundprint, a woman brings a new sense of justice to an impoverished town in India.
Slowly, slowly, a fight started and it became physical, and there was chair throwing, table throwing, smashing utensils. So I quickly sent my staff and I said, stop it before it becomes killing each other, you know. So then it was stopped. The girl became very adamant that I will not marry this boy because of this is the behavior of his relatives and his friends. Then what will happen when I go to their house? Girl's father had given the boy's father 25,000 rupees. So he said, I want my money back. So now the boy's father has given me already 16,000 to keep in safe custody. And both the girl and the boy the next day got married to other people.
The next day?
Yeah.
And all the ceremony, the food and...
It got wasted that day. Anyway, it was all a big fight, so all the food was thrown at each other. There was a big, you know, in Western movies we see cakes. And over here it was all rice, dal, curry, fish curry, chicken curry being thrown at each other. They were all soaked in curry when they came to me.
So now just this financial thing has to be resolved between the two fathers.
Yes, yes. And they need somebody like me who will look at it in a non-biased way. They know that.
Durga's Court, next week on Soundprint. Soundprint episodes are available on CD for a small fee. Give us a call at 1-888-38-TAPES. That's 1-888-38-TAPES. Or you can order online at soundprint.org. Soundprint is production assistants Nkechi Mogeku and Becca Newell, and audio engineer Jared Weisbrot. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Lisa Simeone.